You're listening to the Talk Story Radio Network.
Welcome to another edition of Swoop's World, right here on the new Talk Story Radio Network. Swoop's World, where you get all you need to know about arts, culture, news, and happiness. Our number, if you want to give us a call tonight, is 562-912-3444. You can always email us at swoopsworld@gmail.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Once again, if you want to give us a call, that number is 562-912-3444. Now just sit back and enjoy another edition of Swoop's World on the new Talk Story Radio Network. To another edition of Swoop's World Primetime, Thursday, March 21st, 2013. How's it going, Peter?
Going all right.
Going all right, man. We're looking forward to our guest today. We have filmmaker Walter Dominguez will be joining us. And also, his wife's going to drop in for a little bit. Shelley Morrison, who has played Rosario on Will and Grace for a number of years. So, good chance to talk to her. But Walter has done a film, and we're looking forward to talking to him about it. It is called Weaving the Past, Journey of Discovery. So it's very interesting from what I read about it and the previews I saw. So I'm looking forward to chatting with him. Great night last night, huh?
Yeah. went well.
Yeah.
A lot of sports to talk about.
We did have a lot of sports to talk about. You got your bracket filled out?
I am filled out, and I was looking at it just a few moments ago, and I was already off to a good start. Michigan. Here, let me refresh here. Michigan was whooping Valpo.
Valparaiso, whatever.
Valparaiso.
Yeah.
Still whooping them. In the 5 minutes left in the second, beating them by 17. I think that's a pretty safe bet. And then I've got Wichita beating Pittsburgh. That one just got started, 11-9. So I expect another, stellar.
Off to a stellar start, as always.
Yeah, and then Bucknell and Butler taking off. And they're 29-26. Butler ahead. That's only the second quarter, too. Lots of time there. Lots of time. And I got Bucknell winning, so that's a sure thing.
Well, we'll see how that goes at the end of the day. I didn't think I have Michigan. I know that I have Michigan picked, so we'll see.
That was an easy one, just because.
Yeah. I don't remember all the rest of the stuff.
Yeah.
But I'll have to take a look at my bracket in a few minutes. What else is I going to tell you about? God, there was something I was going to tell you. I can't remember what it was. Oh, anyway. When we were talking about the brackets yesterday and all those kind of things, this morning when I got up on ESPN, man, they're off to, and the game started, their games were already started off to a good start. I mean, it was not bracket-wise, but I just went 9 o'clock in the morning on CBS. There's a basketball game going on. It's kind of an all-day thing for the next 2 weeks, huh?
Yeah, they talk about this being one of the most unproductive 2 weeks of the whole business calendar. This rivals December and, all the holidays that happen then.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
There you have it, man.
It's good for company morale, though.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And all the illegal betting that goes on.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, let's take our first break and then come back and introduce our guest. What do you say?
Sounds good.
This one's by a good friend of the show, Mark Platt. This is called Nick Drake. We're going to be back in a minute and get a chance to know Walter Dominguez. Back after this.
When they found you, Nick Drake, you were never too awake. You're forever 26. Empty bottle of pills in the mix. Nick Drake. Nick Drake. A modern tragedy. You meant so much to guys like me. None of us got to meet you. Doesn't mean we didn't know you, Nick Drake. Nick Drake. Lonely guys with guitars, date sad-eyed girls and dream of stars. And we'd listen to your sad songs, and then we'd try to sing along.
To Swoops World on the Talk Story Radio Network, and we are happy to have as our guest independent filmmaker Walter Dominguez, and he's just done a film called Weaving the Past, Journey of Discovery, and we're happy to have him on the show. Welcome to the show, Walter.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And it's a pleasure to have you. Tell us a little bit about your background and then what led up to the events that kind of got you wanting to do this film.
Well, I'm born and raised in California, in Southern California. I'm Mexican American descent on one side, my mother's side of the family. Family has been here in California since 1904, when my grandfather came over the border. At that time, the border was an open border; people could come and go. It cost a quarter to cross the bridge at El Paso. A nickel before that.
So he
came over the border and under circumstances that are covered by the film, and then from there eventually made his life here in Southern California as a Methodist minister, ministering to mainly Mexican Americans and Mexican immigrants here in the area. So that's my background. I eventually went into filmmaking and worked on that for a long time, then took a detour for 20 years to do other kinds of work, came back to it a decade ago when I decided I really wanted to start documenting the story of my grandfather's early life, which had been a mystery up until then. And so that's how I got going with this project.
Wow. Now, I understand what kind of piqued your interest. Was it was a picture that either your father or a relative had that,
yes,
that you just kind of wondered about?
Yes. I'd always been, as a kid, I'd always been the one who hung on to all the family photos and kept them in a big box or in an album, and took a lot of photos. So I was very interested in whatever we had in the family in terms of images. I'd never seen this one particular picture. And once my mother told me that when my grandfather was dying, he made her take this photograph from him and keep it, and that this man in the photo was his best friend and was very important to him because he kept it in a leather envelope with him throughout his whole life. So my mother mentioned that, and then I became incredibly intrigued. And we couldn't find the photo for a while. And in the film, you'll see that, you know, it finally comes to light. And that really intrigued me even more and led me to learn about this young man who was my grandfather's, like an older mentor, best friend. And they were both young people. And the adventures they had, which were pretty remarkable.
Yeah, well, I was reading the bio, and I mean, they were involved in kind of a revolutionary type activity, and then years later he became a minister, and when you were going through the background and the discovery period, were there things there that you just weren't ready for, that's kind of just surprised you, or had you kind of had an idea about some of the things that, along the way?
Well, my mother said that her father had told her when she was young that this young man he grew up at the hacienda owned by this young man's family. My grandfather was a five-year-old boy in central Mexico. This is in 1882 when he was born, 1888 when he was born. And he ran away from home, that's what he had told us, that he ran away from home because his stepfather was abusive towards him. Mm-hmm. And to get from the little mountain village where he was to this hacienda, large hacienda where he ended up, was a 30 kilometer distance through mountains and canyons and things. So I have no idea how he found his way there. And so he ended up there at the hacienda. And this young man, his family, took him in. They often did that with strays, and of course they put them to work. In that era, you know, kids worked just as hard as adults,
right?
From the age that they could walk and do things. That led to my grandfather being exposed to very advanced ideas, progressive ideas at the time, because this young man, Proxidus is his name, had school teachers come to the hacienda, school him in advanced ideas from Europe, in this case having to do with organizing workers. There was a big workers' movement going on in Europe at the time, and to organize them to get better wages, and led to unionization eventually. But in any case, that was the kind of thinking that this young man, Proxidus, was being influenced by, and then that in turn influenced my grandfather.
Wow.
So the two of them became involved in what we call revolutionary activities, but really, in the time that they were in, it would be just called, you know, because of the incredible oppression going on in Mexico at the time. I mean, literally hundreds of thousands of people were being enslaved and sold into slavery. There was just all kinds of incredible corruption going on. There was a lot of suffering. The vast majority of the people were sinking into incredible poverty. They were actually poorer by 1910 than they had been in 1810.
Wow.
And conditions were so bad that it was ripe for a revolution, but these young men had been promoting the idea of trying to get rid of this dictator for quite a long time.
I imagine as a filmmaker, no matter what you're working on, you kind of dive into it and you weave your way through the background, and whether it's fiction or nonfiction, and you're delving into other people's lives. What was it like personally, on a personal level, going back through your own lineage?
It was a life-changing experience for me, because once I started, I just kept going deeper and deeper and deeper, because one thing led to another. I began by interviewing family members who were still alive, mm-hmm. and I managed to interview some of them literally just before they died, and I'm so glad that I did that. Old friends, a few elders that are still alive who knew my grandfather, had been mentored by him, and so I interviewed them as well. So the interviews took quite a bit of time, and I did quite a few. I have about 400 hours of footage that I accumulated. And the more I learned about him, the more, of course, I became curious, because I realized this man was much more remarkable than even I as a kid, and I always idolized him, but he was much more remarkable than I realized. And so I began wondering, well, where did he learn all this stuff? How did he know these things at such a young age? And so that led me into digging further, and that took me into realizing I had to go travel, talk to some historians, go to Mexico, and dig some more, and also look for his family, the people he never saw again after the age of five, see if we could find them, which is another thing he had wanted us to do when he was dying. He was asking us to do that. So the mantle fell on me, and so I took it up. I learned a big deal about myself through the process, and I recommend everybody doing it in some way, maybe not to the degree I did, but they certainly can interview their elders and talk to them. Find out more. Ask the questions before they're gone.
Right.
Wow. Well, so in talking about the actual kind of production of this, where did you do a lot of the filming? You mentioned you went to Mexico, and, you know, what were the sort of challenges you had as far as making this movie?
Well, I'm born here and raised here. I of course, grew up hearing Spanish, but I didn't grow up speaking it very much. So I had to brush up on my and really get my Spanish to be more fluent. But that wasn't the major obstacle. Mainly it was just making the decision to go and making the time to have the time to do it, setting aside the time and then heading down there and really not knowing exactly. I had no contacts. And I just knew that my grandfather was born in this area near the town of León. It's a large city. And, of course, it wasn't so big back then, but it certainly had grown now. So I decided I would try to use this historical figure, Próximus Guerrero, who was my grandfather's friend and mentor, as a way to try to learn more about my grandfather. So I found a historian down there in León who was very much the authority on Proxenus. And so I began there. And through him, I actually was able to locate some relatives, some descendants of Proxenus. So I was led from one thing to another, and as my wife always tells me, it was as if there were spirits or invisible forces taking you from one place to the next. And I very much believe that. I do believe that there are unseen things and mysteries. And I was truly led. I mean, I got a lot of breaks, a lot of wonderful gifts that came my way in the process.
Yeah. When you're going place to place, and you're getting more information, and certain people are leading you to other people. How were you received? Were you having people call people ahead, or you just showing up, kind of knocking on the door and saying, "Hey, I'm kind of trying to find out about my relative." How were you received by people?
Well, it kind of happened both ways, Keith. One person would hear my story, and then one thing I found in Mexico is people down there are incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
And they really, really go out of their way to be accommodating. So, you know, one person would make a call to a relative. They thought that they heard something about that, or they're like the director of the archive in Lyon, the historian I was telling you about. He suddenly remembered during my interview with him that he knew this woman who had done a painting, exhibited her paintings there at the archive a year or two before, and that she was related to Proxidus Guerrero. So he put in calls to her. She in turn said I should speak to her son, who was really very interested in his ancestors and had done a lot of research. And so she put me in touch with him, and then just one thing led to another. I didn't even know where the hacienda where they grew up was located, and actually neither did the director of the archive. There's so many haciendas in that area, and most of them are in ruins now. So, you know, so anyway, that's kind of the process, you know. Sometimes it was just a cold call, you know, or I would just show up, or it was serendipity. One time I was just looking to get some film for my camera, and I happened to walk into the store and I started talking to the owner. It turned out she had a last name which was the same as the last name of my grandfather's mother. So that led one thing to another, and I thought I had a lead. And so in any case, it was just, you know, just getting out there and hoping for the best and being open to things. And
wow.
Yeah, and it turned out that I got an enormous amount of help, and one clue led to another, and eventually it really uncovered quite a bit.
I have to imagine that, you know, this, like you said, this was 10 years in the making. Did you ever feel overwhelmed at any time?
Yes, many times. First, it was just the thing realizing there was so much about my grandfather's life that I didn't know, and then making the decision to uncover it and realizing that would be difficult. So I had to get over that psychic thing, and then accumulating so much wonderful interview footage with people here who knew him, and realizing, wow, I have a mountain of stuff. How am I going to get through all of this and use the parts that are. And then going to Mexico, and you know, at times it all seemed overwhelming. Having accumulated all the material and found people, and about maybe 6 years into it, my father had died. I had to take a long break to be with him. I didn't want to be away from him. And then it was like, wow, there's all of this. How am I going to organize it? Because I really want to share it as a film, but it's just, there's so much material here. Where am I going to focus?
Yeah.
And that took a long time.
I would imagine. You know, when you're talking about people's lives, and no matter who they are, there's oftentimes an element of relatives that don't want certain things let out or don't want to talk about certain things. Did you run into any of that type of opposition?
I thought I would, frankly. I thought people would, you know, at first I was a little hesitant to bring up topics or, you know, and because I thought, you know, people would get upset. But actually I found that especially seniors, they just open up.
Yeah.
They seem to open up to me. And I guess because I was just genuinely interested. And I think they also realized that it was an important thing to do, to support me on this, and a few of them had a few things to get off their chest, not about my grandfather, but about people, some other people that, so they had, the people had already long died, you know, so they were sort of clear the air, you know, and some very interesting things were revealed as a result of that, but actually, I'm trying to think if there was any time where I really had any resistance or anybody was upset or didn't want to talk about something. It's amazing how people just open up.
Well, so it's complete now and you're putting it out there. What sort of, first I'm kind of curious, these people that you talk to, like how do they feel about this finished product? And then people that aren't necessarily maybe directly connected. How are they feeling about this project?
Well, you know, naturally, when you're choosing clips and you're sort of organizing the whole thing, you're wondering, well, you know, are they going to like this clip? They're going to think they don't like the way they look or the way they sound, or I chose the wrong moment, and
you missed the important part.
Your mind. Pardon?
You missed the important part. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Or they suddenly change. You go through all this trouble to arrange a sequence, and then suddenly you find out that they don't want you to use the clip. They're releasing everything. But that never happened, and we did have a screening for friends, family, and co-workers, people who worked on the film, and some of the people who were interviewed, the old timers, were still alive, and they came to the screening, and they just loved it. They loved it, and they were thrilled to be in it, and I had no issues about you know, the choices I made in the clips, and which was a great relief to me, because you know, it's important that the people that I befriended, because I did, I felt like I befriended them, and they took me into their trust. You know, I didn't want to disappoint them or give a sense of betrayal of their trust, but that never came up.
Yeah.
And it could be. I mean, maybe down the road I'll hear from somebody in Mexico or something, but I don't think so. I think they were all really excited about the fact that we're doing this project.
Well, very good. We, you know, Walter, we need to take a quick break. Can you hang on through the break?
Sure.
All right.
Yeah.
You're listening to Swoops World on the Swoops World Primetime on the Talk Story Radio Network. Our guest is Walter Dominguez, filmmaker, and we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to listen to one from Haster, and we'll be back right after this.
My skin, you got the best to see.
Talk Story Radio.
Hello, this is Normandy Wilson, and you're listening to Snoop's World.
I don't know what else you got going on, but no one pays for sure. You got me thinking about what.
And welcome back to Snoop's World Primetime, and our guest today is Walter Dominguez, independent filmmaker. But before we get back to Walter, let me tell you about a couple of good friends of Snoop's World. SoCal Mobile Detailing Spa, where Brandon Williams goes after the dirt, cars, trucks, SUVs, and boats. He's got the best prices in town. If you're anywhere in the Southern California area, he will come to you. The way to get a hold of him is 310-997-5660 or 562-856-8121 or send him an email at so.calmds@gmail.com. Also, Powerhouse Fitness for all your fitness needs. Contact Jack Nunn. You got indoor rowing, indoor ski ergs, boot camp, personal training, and much, much more. 5750 Boathouse Lane right here in Long Beach, California. Website is www.powerhousefit.com. Give them a call at 562-688-1716. Let them know the Swoops World sent you, and your first week is free. Our guest today is Walter Dominguez, independent filmmaker, and we're happy to have him on the show. Welcome back to the show, Walt.
Hi, Keith.
Peter, do you have a question?
Yeah, so this, you had to uncover all this, and it all remained a secret. Your grandfather didn't share this and kept it a secret because he needed to? Is that kind of how that ended up? He needed to kind of leave the past behind? Why do you think that happened?
That's a good question. I feel that part of it was that the experiences in many ways were very traumatic for him, being an abandoned or runaway child at age five. It's just got to be an incredible trauma. Never saw his mother again after that, and that alone would be very difficult. Then being involved in all of these revolutionary activities with his mentor and his idol, and then his idol being killed, I think, and then being stranded here in Los Angeles. They had set up their base of operations. They had to leave Mexico, this whole group of revolutionaries. It was a large group, and they had to leave Mexico because it was just too intense there. Set up a base first in San Antonio and St. Louis, Missouri, and then here in Los Angeles. And so, anyway, to make a long story short, my grandfather ended up here. His friends were either jailed or killed, and I think also, he was a very peaceful man, and I think that all of the death, all of the killing, all of the betrayals, all of the, just the whole thing, I think left him pretty devastated, losing his only real family member, and so. He did tell me that he was living in the parks of Los Angeles down at what is now Pershing Square. At that time it was Central Park, and then also in the plaza, which is the historic heart of Los Angeles. And so he became homeless. He was an alcoholic. He was really sick. They had been working in copper mines in Globe, Arizona, and in Bisbee. This whole group to support themselves and also to organize workers. So he had some kind of lung disease or TB, and I think it was just such a traumatic experience for him. And then when I was asking him questions as a kid, I just think he just didn't feel he wanted to get into that with me and really go into it. And I think it was just too painful for him to talk about. Also, when he became a Methodist minister and a man of peace and a community leader and everything, I think it's just the kind of thing where I'm sure he would have shared with some people, but probably not the kind of thing he would have wanted to talk about. He felt it was not a good example to be engaged in any kind of violent conflict with people.
Oh, right. You know, it's very interesting. You had mentioned that it's one of those things where what you did, and it's kind of good for everybody to do, not necessarily to the extent, but you know, I think there was a time, I don't know if we still do, where we really, and a lot of cultures really do, really respect their elders, and they learn from their elders, and a lot of the stories are passed down through conversation. Do you think in this day and age, at least in here in the U.S., that we've kind of gotten away from that?
I do. I do feel that we've gotten away from it, and we're losing we're losing so much in the process of, I look at the young kids today, and I mean, I have to look at my own generation myself. I'm 65 now. You know, I was coming of age in the 60s, and you know, we didn't have all of the electronic devices to distract us so much. But even then, in that generation, we were starting to lose the time spent with elders, partly because people have become so dispersed. The families, you know, one person lives here, another person lives way over here, and having that time just to hang out with each other is getting harder and harder and harder. And it's only through having time and sitting down and just being with your elders and actually paying attention to them. I think that's the main thing.
Yeah.
You know, there are opportunities, you know, reunions once or twice a year. You go see your grandparents at Christmas or they come see you and all that. But you could pull them aside for half an hour, an hour, two couple hours somewhere and get away from the kids your own age for a little bit and just focus on them and just say, you know, like, tell me about your life.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think a lot of our backgrounds, all of us come from different immigrant backgrounds, and if we don't, we're Native American. And all of them, Native American and immigrant backgrounds, all of them have a tradition of storytelling and sharing and passing down oral history in the families, and all of us are losing that.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's so interesting because when you're talking to your grandparents or something, you know, it's a different era, different time. And I remember one time just talking to my grandfather, and for some reason this has always stuck with me. He was talking about how he used to hunt, and I'm like, well, why would you hunt? And he said, because if we didn't hunt, we didn't eat.
Yeah, it's a big insight. You know, it's like, you know, you didn't go down to the supermarket or the fast food to get your dinner.
Exactly.
If you didn't grow it or hunt it, you didn't eat.
Exactly. Well,
it's amazing.
You know, like we talked about a little earlier, this was 10 years in the making, and you did a lot of traveling back and forth. And your wife is Shelley Morrison. She's a working actress. And I know she co-produced it, but how does she feel about you going away a lot, doing all these things and being away from home?
Well, you know, she's actually very close by here, and if you'd like, I can bring her on the line on the extension, and she could tell you herself.
We would love that.
Okay. Shelley, you want to just get on the extension? Well, she's incredibly supportive. You know, it wasn't always easy, of course, because I would be off and, of course, thank God I'm not doing that kind of investigation today. In some areas of Mexico, as we all know, it's truly dangerous now.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Fortunately, Shelley's on the line now.
Hi, Keith. How you doing?
Good, Shelley. Thank you, and welcome to Swoop's World.
My pleasure.
For our audience, Shelley Morrison is well known for playing Rosario on Will and Grace, and she's Walter's wife. And I just asked Walter, you know, he spent 10 years in the making, and I know you're a co-producer, I believe, on the movie, but...
The executive producer.
Executive producer, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
How did you feel about him being gone so much, you know, doing the research and things like that?
It worked out. It worked out perfectly. I was busy on Will and Grace. We have a limit, no more than 2 weeks at a time.
Uh-huh.
And in August, we'll be married 40 years.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you. In this town in Hollywood, that's 150.
Hey, I don't think I got 40 years maxed up in the three combined. So one, that's great.
Also, he included me, and I love filmmaking. Yeah. I've been a member of SAG. It says on my union card since 1958.
Wow.
So I've been around.
Yes.
And he included me, and he let me be part of it. And to see him so excited when they got this incredible interview from someone, it was virtually a gift. We love working together. We love being together. And this was something that he needed to do.
Yeah.
It's as much as breathing air. He needed to do this.
What is it? What was it like? You know, you talk about filmmaking and being in the business, you know, completely. When you're working a lot of times with something that's not so much, even though people can create and they write, it's their baby. But this is really personal to somebody you really love. What was it like traveling that road along with him?
I helped him. He had over 400 hours of footage. And so my job was, in essence, because I've been in the industry so long, is to help him to shape it. He did it.
Yeah.
But I would point out where he needed to shape it. And in that, I was very, very, very careful that the essence of Walter is in the film. Animals, children, people gravitate towards him. He's a remarkable human being. And if you get the audience, if you get them rooting for you, if you get them wanting to find out the information as you're finding it out, you pull the audience with you, and that's what he's done with this film.
Nice.
It's universal. It'll touch every ethnic background. It'll touch every age group. The youngins in our family, they call us and they tell us that they watched it and then they stayed up all night talking about it.
Yeah,
and
I can see that.
So when you're doing something that has meaning for so many people, my God, the rewards of that.
Yeah.
And you ask about how, you know, I coped with all the years and everything. We're very low maintenance. I've lived in the same house since 1946.
Wow.
Walter's lived here since 1973.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't owe anything. And my vision of hell is having to go shopping for clothes.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah. You know, comfortable. Be comfortable.
Yeah.
So
just try to keep the material things under control and not get you know, have to have the latest of everything and just live down to earth and put the resources that one has into something that really matters to you, you know, that is a legacy for.
Exactly.
And the journey has been the reward.
Yeah.
These last years, the journey, the people we've met, the incredible gifts we've been given. 75% of the people who either are in the film or worked on the crew or in some capacity, we've known for over 20 years.
That's right.
So it was this incredible group effort.
Well, I called in a lot of favors to get the film made. I mean, we have friends who are musicians, composers, people in technical areas of film. And,
yeah, but they were so willing.
They were willing to do it, God bless them. But, you know, couldn't have done it without them.
And we wanted to put our own money into it. Because we it was important for Walter to follow the thread.
It was a project that obviously needed time to unfold, and you couldn't do it on a schedule. It had to happen organically, and to have a conclusion for the film, you know, we couldn't manufacture it. It had to happen on its own. It had to be something real, and so that took time and. So you can't be, you know, asking people to invest in something that is open-ended like that and that could take who knows how long before they see their money come back. So
right.
A lot of people who have worked with us who are in the industry, sometimes you're asked to put in so much energy into a lot of garbage. So when you have an opportunity to be part of something that, oh, wow, this is really, you know, stirring up my creative juices, they want to come on board.
Yeah.
But one thing I'll tell you, Walter, if this makes any money back, I want a new garbage disposal.
You got it. That'll be the first purchase when we hit the jackpot.
Well, you know, what you two talk about and just your dynamics brings apart a question. No matter what you do in life, but anytime you're doing working on something that you're passionate about, it is so important to have support. And to have to have each other support. Oh, we got a plane going by. Give me a second here.
Woo!
lot of them taking off today, man.
We got a loud day today. Sometimes.
We're right next to the airport, so they take off quite a bit. But today is more so than ever. But to have that kind of support with each other's projects, how important is that to get through the day-to-day activity of a lot of these types of activities?
It's essential. It's essential. Walter was there for me 150, 200% when I was doing Will and Grace. I was also battling cancer. And, I mean, he takes incredible care of me.
Yeah.
And I take incredible care of him. And when you have the realization that this is something we're being led, let's just follow the yellow brick road.
You have to have support. You have to have some kind of support. Even if you don't have a partner, I'm so blessed to have Shelley. But even if a person doesn't have a partner like that, maybe they have a good friend, counselor, somebody who kind of, they can turn to when they're feeling down, when they're feeling hopeless, when they're feeling like, I'm just going to give up on this thing. It's too much. And then they realize, no, this somebody there knows that this is too important for you to let go of, and they give you a pep talk. They point out all the good things that have happened, all the qualities you have, the strengths you have to keep going. And I also have some good friends, male friends, who I really need. I enjoy being with and spending time with, and they also have been wonderfully, supportive and given me pep talks. I mean, I especially needed them when Shelley had cancer and I was scared.
Yeah.
And, those things are very important. The people in your life, maybe you can count on one hand the people who really you can turn to like that, but God bless them. They're, it doesn't take a lot of people. It takes a few to keep you going.
Oh, Keith, we're blessed.
Excellent.
We're so blessed.
Excellent.
It's like every day the gratitude that we feel. I'm an early riser. I usually get up. I'm trying to get up around 4:30. It used to be 4. And I just like to go quietly out on the deck and just listen to the city sounds and the birds. And we constantly have help if we just allow ourselves to be open to it.
Right.
And we're using that help for something, for to not to add to the confusion of the world.
Right.
Yeah, which is what I think you guys are doing there, because you're having conversations so that people who your guests are and your listeners can get a more in-depth point of view on things, and I think that's great.
Keith, have you seen the film?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I've seen the trailer, and I'm really intrigued, and I really look forward to seeing the film, which is the next thing I was going to ask you. I know the website is weavingthepast.com, but where is it being shown places, or how do people have the opportunity to see it?
Well, the next opportunity to see it in the Los Angeles area will be May 18th. It will be at the Linwood Dunn Theater in Hollywood, which is owned by the Motion Picture Academy, and they have a wonderful theater there.
Walter and I are sponsoring. We're paying for it. We're sponsoring a benefit for the Museum of Social Justice.
Wow.
Which we're on the board of, and we support very much. It's a new museum downtown in downtown Los Angeles on Olvera Street, and it's a marvelous museum and has an incredible collection of photographs and of Los Angeles 110 years ago and 100 years ago, and documents immigrants in downtown area and their conditions and the work that was done to try to help them through.
But they can go to the website either to weavingthepast.com.
Facebook / weavingthepast, Journey of Discovery. Twitter, and I'm not a big tweeter, but they can also, keep up to date on things like that. At the Museum of Social Justice website, there is a page there where people, if they want to go to the screening, they can buy tickets. It's a donation.
It is a benefit for the museum, so we're funding the screening, and the tickets, whatever the tickets or donations, go directly to the Museum of Social Justice.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah,
and the website, they can go to the website there to get tickets?
Yes, the Museum of Social Justice.org. Okay.
And you know, they're $100 a ticket, but we'll have a red carpet, we'll have a reception, the theater is gorgeous. They're doing something to give back at the same time, seeing a wonderful story, wonderful history. You know, you go out and you spend $100, you know, on a T-shirt now. I don't know. I haven't been to a department store. I can't remember when. I've been living in a cave.
You could definitely believe that they spend more than that on a pair of sneakers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, geez. Well, this is something that would just enrich everybody. And this is, teenagers love this. Our nieces and nephews. Oh, my God. They're so thrilled.
Yeah, but we also have had a lot of people who have no connection with us whatsoever who've come, friends of friends and all that, of all ages and backgrounds and ethnicities. And everybody's coming away feeling very, very motivated to go out and see what they can find out about their own families.
Oh, everyone's been so wonderful. You know, Keith, I'm just waiting for the shoe to drop.
Well, not everyone's going to like what you do. I mean, there's just there's always somebody. But in general, I would say it's been an overwhelming response of enthusiasm. And a lot of people come out from the screenings. We've had some private ones here for smaller groups in tears. I mean, it's an emotional journey.
That's amazing. And you know what? We've tried to cover a lot, and I just want to make sure we get everything out there that you want to get out there today. Was there anything that we haven't had a chance to cover that you would like to talk about?
One thing. My dear cousin, he's one of my last blood relatives left. He's in his early 80s. He's on oxygen 24/7, and he really wanted to see the film, and it was kind of daunting for him because he doesn't like to read subtitles. Yeah. But we did something very special with the subtitles. We put them in yellow against a black background. We sent him a screener. He is so thrilled. He said this is the first time in his life that he's ever been able to read subtitles.
Well, the film is not completely in what
it's just a few parts.
Some of it's in English. The narration's all in English. But some of the people we interviewed, of course, being in Mexico, they speak Spanish. So we have subtitles there. Some of the historians in Mexico. But it as Shelley said, we went out of a way to make it easy for people,
yeah,
so that it's not a distraction, and they feel everybody's been saying that it really is very easy to very pleasurable.
You know, that's an excellent point, because that's been my issue with a lot of times with subtitles. I've seen like white subtitles, and then you know the scene in the background is light, and so the words just fade away.
Yeah.
We took a lot of time with it. Walter and our editor, Maria, who is a love, she's been with us now 5 years. You know, everyone working on this film, none of us are getting rich.
Yeah.
So there must be something about this film that keeps all these people still wanting to work on it.
Well, of course, she's not doing it for free, but you know, she's been committed to it, and that's marvelous.
Well,
and
you know,
we feel like all these people that we've been working with, like they're our sons and daughters.
And
thing I did want to say, Keith, if there's a moment, I don't know how much time we have left, but I did want to encourage everybody to go out. It's so easy now with a little video camera. They're high def now, these little tiny cameras. When I started this project, you had these big DV cameras. And so, you know, it's so easy. Your iPod, your telephone, your iPhone, you can just record right off of that. You can shoot video. It's so easy. Just take the time and record the stories of your own family. You're not going to regret it, and you'll be so glad you did, especially as you get older.
Yeah. Well, Walter and Shelley, I want to thank you so much for joining us on Swoops World. And you know, I've got a chance to go to the website and seen the previews for Weaving the Past, Journey of Discovery. And it's just an amazing story. And I just think it's a wonderful thing that you did. And to really expose yourself out there like that and your family like that. Like to me, it seems like it might have been a difficult task, but you really embraced it, and you. From what I've seen so far, it's a lesson for everybody. And I want to thank you for joining us on the show today.
Thank you, Keith.
Thank you, Keith.
And you're the other gentleman there. I forget his name.
Peter.
Yes.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And best of luck.
Best of luck.
Look forward to seeing it ourselves.
Congrats.
Thank you so much.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye. Walter Dominguez and Shelley Morrison from Weaving the Past, Journey of Discovery. Go to weavingthepast.com, and the website there will tell you all about it. They have a screening coming up in May, was it, Peter?
I think so, yeah.
And you can go to museumofsocialjustice.org and purchase tickets there. It's a fundraiser, so the money. All the money's going to the museum, so it's going to a good cause. $100 per ticket, but like you said, you know, lots of times when you talk about these fundraisers, you're not sure where your money's going.
Yeah,
you know what percentage or whatever. They said, you know, all the money goes back to the museum, so which is an outstanding thing. And this story is just amazing, man.
Yeah,
you know, just and you talk about his grandfather. His grandfather must have lived just a remarkable life, you know. And you know, he went through a lot of different things here, and then he kind of went another route, and to learn all these things about somebody from your past, you know, bit by bit, must have been an intriguing series of events.
Yeah, I can only imagine that. That would be an interesting opportunity. To be able to do that.
You know, he said something. I forgot to mention it to him. He said something about you know he grew up here in the U.S. Probably in a household that spoke Spanish, but he didn't speak Spanish that well. And I have several friends like that. I've actually, growing up, my next door neighbor, her parents spoke fluent Spanish to the point where the father, he spoke great English, and I could talk to him back and forth. The mother, her English was very broken, but my friend really couldn't speak Spanish. She understood every bit of Spanish,
right?
But when it came to speaking, she said, it was kind of always messed up. And I have another friend like that, and we've gone to Mexico together, and he understood Spanish 100%. But when he would speak Spanish, he would use like the wrong terms. I remember talking to somebody, and he said something about a neck, and the girl started laughing. And then our other friend says, "What they're saying is you're using the wrong term for human neck. What you're using is a term for chicken neck." Right? So, but it's interesting, you know. And I've never, having lived in a situation like that, it's got. You know, I'm sure it happens with a lot of different languages, where people grow up in a household that speaks a language fluently, but I guess because they want to talk to their friends and stuff like that, they don't ever speak it; they just understand it. So that must have been interesting when he went back there to go and do the research and try to communicate with people, because he understood it, just
right.
Trying to do the whole conversation thing.
Yeah, that would have been challenging for sure.
Well, it was great. That was a great interview and a great time, and I look forward to seeing this film and learning much more about it. Go to weavingthepast.com and check it out. I want to thank Walter Dominguez and Shelley Morrison for joining us today. Next week, Wednesday, Swoops World Late Night right here at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and next week, Thursday, right here, Swoops World Prime Time. And until then, we hope everybody has a safe and wonderful week, and we will see you next week.
Have a good one.
Good day, y'all.
The views and opinions expressed by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Talk Story Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.